Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to the next step with Father Vazquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. No, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast on epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, and now on Blueberry. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 279 of The Next Step. This is a podcast that puts together a lot of stuff. Yeah, it mixes the ancient world with today. It takes the most ancient of all Christian traditions, Armenian Orthodoxy, polishes it up for today, and, well, we find a relevant solution called Armadoxy. We're inviting you to take a step with us right now. This podcast is being brought to you as part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission. Hey, if you're ready, I know I am. Let us take the next step. Hey, it's so good to have you join us today. I hope you're doing well wherever you're at in the world. I hope it's a beautiful place. It is over here. I have to say that, okay, because we're in Southern California, and, you know, it is beautiful. And taking advantage of a nice sunny day and some relaxation before all the congestion comes into this town. Yes, the Dodgers are headed to the World Series. It means we're going to be seeing all kinds of stuff going out on our streets over here. But, hey, we stay clear of the stadium, enjoy it on TV. About the only time of year that I do watch baseball. I enjoy baseball from a distance, you know. I could watch it for a little bit. I can't take long term. Just like doesn't move, you know? Especially when they start talking about it's a no-hitter. You know, it's like a perfect game. What's the fun of that? Hey, isn't some of the fun to just be throwing the ball and making these home runs and doing this and that? Anyway, I guess I'm not playing by the rules right now, am I? But hey, what else is new, right? It's okay. I guess when it comes to baseball, okay. I'll take it. You know, I wanted to start off with that because did you hear this tragedy? Baseball fans got into it. Dodgers and Giants. And they killed a guy. I was so appalled by that. I mean, where must you be? Where must your head be? That, you know, you'd kill somebody because of a baseball team? I can understand. Be a fan, you know. Clap. Even root. I can understand going to all the games. I can understand that. There's an enjoyment in it. Okay, so you get season tickets, you find some nice seats and everything. I can understand buying the paraphernalia that comes with the team, you know? There's shirts, there's hats, there's cups, coffee mugs, all kinds of stuff. Okay, I can understand that. But how can you understand killing somebody because they're on another team? They're the opposition. This is wild. Just happened a couple weeks ago. And I don't know if it's saying something about the times that we're living in, if it's saying something about personalities, about just the instability that's out there. You can go in many, many directions, but I'll tell you something. It's like, it's got to give us a moment to pause and just say, what are we doing? What are we doing here in this world? And no wonder when you look at things like Syria. You know, no wonder. I mean, people think, okay, the only way to bring about peace is through force. The only way that my team is going to win is by force. Think about it for a moment. These are patterns that we learn as children, and they continue. And they get grand. They get grand on a larger scale, don't they? I could beat you up. You could beat me up. My father could beat up your father. Yeah, like they're going to come out to the field and beat up each other. Okay, maybe a big brother. Big brother will come out. But at the end of the day, how do we move forward? How do we find that peace? I don't know, just thrown out there. It was beyond me that somebody would get killed. Somebody would kill for a baseball team. Okay, let's move forward, okay? A lot of stuff to talk about. Hey, this week we are going to be having a special presentation about landmine clearances. That means Gala's back in town. You remember a few months ago she appeared here on The Next Step. And if all goes well, I'm going to try to bring her in next week. Not to talk about landmines, but talk about, well, reflections of what it's like to be here. What it's like to be here from Karabakh, from a war-torn country, and seeing the contrasts. Not the external ones. You know, hey, do you have a Costco? We don't have a Costco. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the contrasts of life. And, well, I have something in mind. And so I hope you'll join us next week because I want to go in that route. But for today, I thought I'd share with you some thoughts, things that have been going on lately. I know the last few weeks we've been talking about the big synod of bishops that got together, the conclave that came together at Holy Etchmiadzin, and I shared with you some of my disappointments last week, as well as a solid way of looking at it and realizing we are moving forward. I want to thank those people who responded. Some people, yeah, they took me to task on it. Other people, you know, gave a resounding amen to it. But I got to tell you, it's been an interesting few weeks, and I'm still processing a lot of the information that came out of that bishop's conference and sharing it with a few friends and kicking around a few different articles in here and there. But something caught my eye just a couple days ago, and this came out of the bishop's conference, and, you know, not directly, it's an indirect connection, but it's obvious it came out of there. It is an interview with one of the bishops, namely Bishop Pakrad Kalistanyan. He used to be the primate of Canada. Now he's at the Holy See, at the Mother See of Holy Etchmiadzin, heading off a department on social doctrine. Wow! I got so excited. And in this interview, I'll put a link on our show notes to it. I do want you to check it out. Now, let me tell you a couple things about the interview. It's conducted in Armenian. It is, it's fascinating. And I was reading through it and got through it. And then all of a sudden, I had a pop-up on my browser. It was a Google pop-up. It says, "This page, would you like this page to be translated from Armenian to English?" I said, yeah, I would like to. So I pressed on it, and it says, "This page has now been translated from Armenian to English." So I went down, I got excited. I said, wow, that was pretty good. And I've used Google Translate many times, but this is fairly a large volume of information, and there are words that are peculiar to the church. In other words, how do you get through the ecumenical words, sirpasasutun? It was interesting to look at it, okay? So I started reading, and you know what? I gotta admit, it's not perfect, obviously, but it's okay. You know, if you know what you're doing, you can look at it, and you can get through. It's obvious it's word-for-word translation. Let's see, let me read a sentence from it. It says, "Although the official report was silent on this point, however, the main expected at this meeting in the churches in line with the spirit of life and time to make the change according to the Catholicos of all Armenians." Pretty good, huh? That's a nice translation. It's not perfect. Far from perfect, right? But you can make it out. You can kind of figure it out. Anyway, I'll definitely put a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. Now, let me share with you some of the ideas. They're talking about social doctrine. And specifically, he starts talking about some of the decisions that were made at the Bishops' Conference. So Bishop Bachrach talks about the efforts to unify the service of baptism, and he talks about the second big issue, which is the canonization of the saints. Now, I've shared with you that this was one of the topics that was going to be there, but I haven't really shared with you some of the thoughts and some of the understanding that has to take place in order to get into that mode of discussing the canonization of saints. On the surface, it sounds like a no-brainer. Yeah, of course, these people died, and they should be considered martyrs of the church. They could be considered saints. And the minute you say it, the minute you articulate it, like in other words, in your head, it makes a lot of sense. But when you articulate it, what happens? All of a sudden, you say, wait a minute. Martyrs of the church? They're going to be saints? You mean like my grandmother is going to be a saint and I could pray to her? That's pretty cool, huh? But then you look at it a little bit more, and then you start saying, wait a minute, there's some flaws in this whole thing. First of all, as Bishop Bachrach talks about in this article, it's been over 500 years since the Armenian Church has canonized anyone a saint. I believe it was Date Batsi was the last one, but don't quote me on that, okay? 500 years ago. So the procedures are obviously need to be reviewed, revisited. The procedures need to be discussed. What happened 500 years ago? Was there issues of miracle? Now, we all know the procedures for the Catholic Church because it's done so often and we hear about it. It takes a 5-year process. There has to be a miracle associated with the saint. There has to be some testimonies given about the person. And then eventually, as it goes on, the process, the individual becomes a saint. And most recently, they're talking about Pope John Paul II and Pope John the 23rd of blessed memory. These two popes will be canonized next April by His Holiness Francis. And it's an interesting idea because you're going to have two popes canonizing two former popes. That's right, yeah, don't forget. There is Pope Benedict too, right? So Pope Benedict and Pope Francis should be at the canonization. It'll be interesting. They're going to have to write out how the ceremony takes place. But that's beautiful, isn't it? That shows that the church is alive. It's creating new services, it's creating new opportunities, and addressing the situation as it takes place. Now, many of you know, for instance, that our esteemed producer, Susie Shatarevyan, although she gives countless hours to the work of epostle.net, she happens to hold a pretty prestigious job at Loyola University at the law school library. And she sent me an article just yesterday about the law school. And in particular, not only the law school, excuse me, entire Loyola, basically from their health care, they decided that they will no longer fund elective abortions. Now, I'm not going to go into the details, obviously. You know, it's a loaded question, and there are two sides. There are two sides. Don't let anybody tell you it's just a one-sided debate. There are two sides, and you got to listen to them. There's a lot of stuff being said. But you have to admire a university that it says, okay, here's our grounds. We are Catholic, and therefore abortion is against our doctrine, and therefore we will not fund them. Interesting, right? We're talking large scale things that make impact, that have impacts. And what I wanted to show is that, you know, the church is evolving, the church is alive, and it has to address the situations that take place based on principles. I've shared this with you in the past about the Salvation Army. Now, this is a group that helps indigent people, helps the homeless in our area. And I'm sure throughout America, I don't know what the extent of the Salvation Army is. I don't know if it goes beyond America, but wonderful, wonderful organization. And I shared this with you in the past They received a $100,000 donation. Somebody had won a lottery and had sent them $100,000, and they refused it. They refused it. They said, we cannot take money that was earned, that was received, let's not say earned, that was received from gambling. Because we have seen so many of our people, our clients that come here, have their lives destroyed because of gambling, it would be wrong for us to take this money. Now that's a principle, isn't it? That's standing up for the principle. And so you got to admire the Catholic Church for taking that stand, or specifically Loyola administrators. But the point here is that things move, things change, rules change, and you need to be able to have a solid foundation and build on that. Obviously Christianity, obviously the Roman Catholic Church, obviously Orthodoxy. And so this interview with Bishop Bachrad is an interesting one, because we're building on something and we're trying to develop social doctrine within the Armenian Church. And I think this should be applauded. This should be focused in on. And that's what I want to do. I want to share some thoughts with you, because as you know, what we do here at The Next Step, what we do from our parent organization in Issues, the St. Peter Armenian Church, basically, it's about social doctrine. And so I thought we'd spend some time today talking about that social doctrine and how important it is, okay? That's what we're going to spend the time with today, right after the song of the day. I'm picking out something from Norair Kardashian. No relation, of course. Norair Kardashian from Zarastan album. Enjoy!
Thank you.
Kardashian. That is off of an album called Zarastan. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll put a link on today's show notes so you could check out all of his great music. You know, Norite is an interesting name, too. You know, I said something earlier about Kardashian. And of course, no relationship to the famous, or should we say infamous, Kardashians. But Norite, that's an interesting name. You know, Eid means man. Norair, new man. Nor is new. Hurair, hur means fire. Fireman. Hurair. Interesting, huh? Let's see, what else is there? Jirair. Jir means hard. Hard man. Interesting names, huh? Anyway, Norair Kardashian. I escaped for a few minutes. Excuse me for that. Okay, back from zoning out. I'm with you now. Okay, we're going to be talking about In His Shoes as the social doctrine of the Armenian Church. Definitely the social doctrine of Armodoxy. And I want to go through some of the procedures right now because we talk about In His Shoes. We work through In His Shoes. It's basically the philosophy that we've come up with. But I wanted to share with you how it evolved, how it came about. Because when we're looking at Bishop Bakrad, and we wish him all the best because this is such an important part of the Armenian Church, of Orthodoxy, which many times we get accused that Orthodox churches are really unaware or not participating in social issues. And it's unfair because throughout history, the Orthodox Church has been front and center with social issues. Even the Armenian Church, yes, as small as it is, it has had social ministries. And there have been many throughout the centuries. Now, you got to remember, you say, well, we don't see them now. Well, don't forget, we talk about the Armenian Church, Armenian Orthodoxy, being 2,000-year-old tradition. But it took a pretty severe beating back in 1915, okay? When you got people dying, but you got your clergy, you've got your church basically destroyed, raped and pillaged. Destroyed. And so from those ruins, it took a while, and then, of course, there was the 70 years of communism, and basically in communist doctrine, church religion is taboo. Religion is the opium of the people, says Karl Marx. And I remember back in 77, being a student in Holy Etchmiadzin, having the communist kids, I forgot what they were called, pioneers or something like that, they would come and dressed up in their uniforms. Some of them took some shots at us. In fact, one of them spit on my friend Rafi, and little did they know that Rafi was a boxer. And I think that was the last time that this kid dared to spit on, dared to spit on anybody in black. But basically, the kids were trained too that the priests, that the church was ridiculous. It had no role, no function. Well, of course, after genocide, functioning for 70 years in communism, of course, yeah, it's been stripped away. But look at the power of Christ, okay? So right after independence of Armenia, you had a revival, you had a rebirth of the church. And so today, when we see things like this, you got to remember that, okay, the church of 20 years since the rebirth, not talking about a church of 2,000 years, but really a church of 20 years has now found it important, necessary to have a department of social doctrine. And of course, out here, you know, in the diaspora, this is such welcome news because many of the diasporan dioceses, particularly those here in North America, have been dabbling with social issues and have been, well, because of the times and the needs. And so it's so beautiful that we're getting the Holy See Etchmiadzin saying that, okay, we're appointing someone, we're putting a high-ranking bishop in charge of this, and hopefully there'll be a good flow of information between the Mother See and the counterparts in the dioceses. Now, that being said, In His Shoes evolved. Really, it did. Now, let me back up a little bit. 2003, okay? I had been called to organize the youth ministry at the diocese, and my bishop had invited me to take on that position. And we started getting together young people, and as I would do many times, as organize opportunities, retreats, where young people can think about identity issues. And identity in very simple terms, you know? What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman? In more complicated terms, what does it mean to be a Christian? What does it mean to be an Armenian? Ethnically, okay? What does it mean to be a member of the world community? And this group of young people got together one day. We actually had a retreat in a town called Santa Clarita, which is down here in the Los Angeles area, up by Magic Mountain. And we rented a hotel room and took all these kids in there. And I know the manager was kind of upset. We assured him we weren't going to be spending the night. We're just using it during the day. And we took over this hotel room and we started talking. And by the time the conversation got around to what does it mean to be an Armenian, it was interesting. They couldn't define being an Armenian outside of the word genocide. And this was troubling for me. It was disturbing for me because all it did was propagate the victim mentality. Okay? We had bought into it, hook, line, and sinker. It was a wake-up call for me. I had known that this existed, but not to this extent, because everyone in that room was talking about genocide. Now, mind you, these are young kids. These are kids in their mid-teens. I'd say the oldest was probably 16 or 17 years old. Okay? And we're talking about identity issues. And when it came down to Armenian, the only way they could define it was in terms of genocide. We are survivors. Well, that's okay? There's nothing wrong. You want to be a survivor, right? But what comes along? What's the baggage that comes along with survivor? At what point do you start become a living, breathing entity? Like, in other words, you are an individual who has this, that attributes, one of which happens to be you are an Armenian, okay? And is the only way that you could define that being Armenian in terms of a cataclysmic event such as genocide? Well, maybe so. But then what? Then what? Because along with that discussion, you have the discussion of, well, recognition. And don't forget that the Armenian Genocide has not been recognized by the one and only superpower, namely the United States of America. Now, I think it's argumentative. I think when you have a president such as Ronald Reagan who said that it is a genocide, it should go. But I understand there's issues. You want it to be put down in paper. You want it to be appearing someplace. And you know how I feel about that. To me, these are non-issues. But as young people, this is what they've been brought up with, that basically you are talking about an event that really didn't, well, there's a question mark on it. We don't want to say really didn't happen, but there is a question mark on it. So now you're starting to talk about human dignity too, right? Okay, you're an Armenian, you have a history, but wait a minute, your history is in question. And imagine what that does to generation after generation that is growing up now, believing that their story needs a question mark at the end of it rather than an exclamation point. And tragically, we see this every April 24th, here, especially here in Southern California. You see crowds of people getting together and demanding recognition of the genocide. Hey, what are you looking for? Recognition? It happened. If somebody says, I don't recognize it, what does that mean? I mean, I understand. I'm not that naive. I understand the politics of it. I know the necessity of having it recognized. But in many cases, what we're doing, whether consciously, unconsciously, whether it's part of the program or not, what we're doing is we have created generations that see themselves as second-class citizens. In other words, I have a history, but my history is not valid. Second-class citizens, I have a history and I'm demanding the government accept it, and the government says, no, your history doesn't count. I thought about this just the other day. You know how there's different levels of history. I was watching this show late at night called the Arsenio Hall Show. Now, Arsenio Hall is a talk show host back in the 1990s, and I was busy raising a young family at that time and didn't have time to watch this man who, you know, people, I do remember when they twirl around their fist and go, woo, 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 woo. And but I never watched his show, never watched it. And so he has reappeared, resurfaced. I don't know if it's nationwide, if it's syndicated, but definitely here in Los Angeles. So one night I was flipping through the channels and there he was. He was on a talk. He was running his talk show. And it was very interesting to me because he was doing a little skit where he had a young baby, a black baby, in the back seat of the car. Arsenio is driving the car, and the black baby, who has the face of a man, it's basically a man dressed up as a baby, stops off at a gas station, turns over to the lady pumping gas over there, and goes, "Hey, white lady, I like the way you handle that hose." And I'm just like looking, wow, aren't we past this? I mean, what this it just seemed like, yeah, this is like old stuff. And of course, the canned laughter, ha ha ha, people laughing, ha ha ha. I love that canned laughter. It comes in, you know, like, hey, white lady, ha ha ha. But think of the reverse. Think of a van coming up to a place, to a gas station, and a white man from the back going, "Hey, black lady, I like the way you handle that O's." I mean, it misses that laughter track. And it doesn't get the same. It's not the same thing. It's apples and oranges, isn't it? And in the same way, when we talk about the Armenian genocide, for some reason, the Armenians can be spit upon. Condoleezza Rice. Remember? There was a famous, I'll dig that up and put that on our show notes. If you haven't seen this, it's worth watching. Adam Schiff, one of the esteemed congressmen in our area, is going at it with Condoleezza Rice, who was the Secretary of the State at the time. 2007, I think, this takes place. And Adam Schiff asks her, "Miss Rice, why can't the Armenian genocide be recognized? Why is it that we have a problem as the United States of claiming Cambodia, claiming Rwanda, claiming even Darfur as genocide, but we're hesitant to put the label genocide on the Armenians?" And Condoleezza Rice, interesting rebuttal. She said, what we're asking is for the Armenians and Turks to sit down to talk about their differences, and then get on with it. Those are her words, to get on with it. In other words, this is past, you know? Get on with life. I mean, it's really excellent strategy for living. Yeah, get on with life. But certainly, there's a double standard there, isn't there? She would never, never, never have dreamed of going up to a group of Jews and saying, "Why don't you and the Germans sit down, talk about what happened during World War II, and then get on with it? You know, put a sock in it. Don't talk anymore." Double standard. You can't imagine her going up to African Americans here in the United States and saying, "You know, why don't you sit down with a few white folks who came over at the time of the Pilgrims, that whose ancestors came over with the first wave of Europeans, and discuss that with them about slavery, and then get over it." In other words, if it happened, it happened. If it didn't, it's okay. It doesn't matter. And you can't imagine her saying that to any other group, but somehow for the Armenians, it's okay. She throws that out at the Armenians. And so this wears at your psyche, because you've got young kids who are growing up understanding that they are second-class citizens, that the president doesn't recognize them, that the Secretary of State doesn't recognize them. Well, then who are they? Because they keep looking for other people to validate them. Now, remember this. This is a rule of not only Armenians. This is a rule of life. This is a special one, okay? That's right, the bell's in there. You got to pay attention to this one, okay? This is an important one. You don't need other people to validate who you are. Believe in yourself. You don't need other people to validate. And the minute that you give them the right, then what happens? You've lost. You've lost who you are because you're asking someone else to define you. We don't need that. And so these kids, we talked to them, and at the end of the day, we came up with this beautiful, beautiful formula, completely, completely gathered and reached to by the young youth. The idea is the only way that we can understand ourselves as Armenian Christians, in other words, a people that have gone through genocide, one that is unquestionable, as a people that have adopted Christianity from the first centuries, as an inheritor of that legacy, there's only one thing that I need to do, and that is for me to walk in the shoes of others. Because if we're talking about genocide, the Armenian genocide is not the last one. Afterwards, there was Nazi Germany, there was Cambodia, there was Rwanda, there was Bosnia, today there's Darfur. We need to walk in the shoes of others to feel their pain. And it occurred to me that day when they came up to it, that is so originally Armenian. I mean, so originally, because when you go to Armenia and you talk with people, what do they say? Tsavadanim. Let me take your pain. Let me walk in your shoes. And so In His Shoes was born as a movement to answer genocide. In other words, it became a social doctrine that by accepting our past as victims of genocide, by accepting the tradition of Christianity, we have only one answer, and that is to look at others and to help others. And so that genocide that we keep referring to becomes the motive, becomes the reason, becomes the pusher, the prime mover that pushes us and makes us do those good things. And so from there, In His Shoes Ministries was born, reaching out to the homeless people, doing blood drives, helping out in genocide awareness, all kinds of things. It was a grassroots movement, and it still is. In fact, as I finish this podcast in a few minutes, I'm going to be heading out to Ascensia, where we're going to be feeding the homeless. And every time we do, we remember that, hey, we were once like this. I'm always touched whenever somebody comes up to me and says, how come you guys are helping? What are you guys doing? What's your church all about? And we say, well, first of all, we're helping as Christians, because Christ commands us to. Second of all, we do because of our past. We were once homeless. We were without shoes. We were once without a shirt. We were out in the desert, and people spat on us. We were on the receiving end of nothing when the whole world looked on and they closed their ears, closed their eyes, closed their mouth, and said, we see no evil, we speak no evil, we hear no evil, therefore you don't exist. We can't do that. We can't do that. We have to walk in the shoes of others. Because you see, who is the other? Who is that shoe? That shoe is the shoe of Christ. Now do you get it? In His Shoes. You say, wait. How did you make that connection? Well, I'm glad you asked. Jesus makes the connection very clearly. In the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25, Jesus talks about the final judgment. He says, "The Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him. Then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate them one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left." Okay, just if you don't know a biblical metaphor, you want to be on the side of the sheep, okay? Just in case. "Then the king will say to those on his right hand, 'Come, O blessed of my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the earth. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me.' The righteous will ask him then, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? When did we see you thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you? When did we see you naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?' And the king will answer, 'Truly I say to you, as you did it for one of the least of my brethren, you did it to me.'" Wow, the least of his brethren. You see, because every one of us, I know it. If Jesus came to your front door, knocked, and he said, "Hey, I'm Jesus Christ, would you give me some food?" I know every one of us would. If Jesus was in prison, I know every one of us would make a line around that prison to get in and to say hello to Jesus, to visit him. If Jesus was without clothes, we'd take out our credit cards and we'd go and buy him some clothes. We wouldn't want him to be without clothes. Think about that when we think about these ornate churches too. Why do we do that, right? We're clothing Jesus. But that's exactly the point. Jesus is saying, "I am the least of your brothers. So, you do that for me, you're doing it for the least of my brothers." So when that homeless man is in front of your house, is without clothes and needing clothes, when you help them, you're helping Christ. We would do it for Christ, definitely. He's saying, do it for everyone. And so In His Shoes evolved with these sentiments. In His Shoes came about as an answer to genocide, but it's fortified with the message of Christ. And there you have it. That's it. That's how simple it is. You want a social doctrine? That's it. You help people. You love people. Check out yesterday's Bible study. We talked about this last night. If you haven't seen it, it's at our Armadoxy channel on YouTube. What we're doing, by the way, is we've now no longer streaming. We're actually putting up the file. So it's a nice, clean file. We were having trouble streaming on a variety of platforms. First of all, the equipment, and we're in an old church, and so our internet connection, though it's, you know, pretty fast, it's not a steady one, and it kind of like has a Doppler effect to it. But the bigger reason why we went to this format was because most of our listeners, most of our followers, our viewers, live in areas that are, well, time zones ahead of us. And so when we start broadcasting over here at 7 in the night and in the evening, it's already 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock in the South American countries. It's already beyond midnight. It's 3-4 in the morning in the European continent. It's 7 in the morning in Armenia, and it's almost noontime over there in Australia. So what's happening is it's not really the best time. So we said, instead of us streaming it, why don't we just take the file and put it up on our YouTube channel? So that's what we've been doing. But check it out. We talked exactly about this. You got to be able to apply what you learn. A couple of days ago, I was, I saw my friend, he does the Bible study at the diocese. I poked my head and he had about 60 people at his class. And afterwards we talked, I said, and then what happens after they've learned about all these stories? He says, I don't know. He just laughed. And it's so true. People spend times, eons, learning the truths of the Bible. It really comes down to a very simple message. Love one another. Take care of one another. You're all you have, your brothers and sisters on this planet. Take care and love one another.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are growing daily with new listeners around the globe. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that reminder of how you can get involved in Epostle. And remember, Epostle came out of what we talked about today in issues. Dativ Outreach, that we're right now targeting domestic violence, foster families. Again, it came out of In Issues, which means it came out of you. Those of you who sponsor this programming are also sponsors of In His Shoes. So I invite you to get out there on the website, whether you get on Epostle or In His Shoes, it all comes into the same pocket and it all funds the different programs that we have. So please be generous in your giving. And also talk to me. Talk to me about starting an In His Shoes franchise. I don't know what other word to use, but an In His Shoes franchise in your area. Let's talk about maybe getting together, maybe coming down to your area and spending some time in developing these ideas. In His Shoes is really the way to go. You know that. It just makes sense. So I invite you, get on our website, inhisshoes.org. We're revamping a lot of stuff. We're moving. These things are always fluid. There's always stuff going on, but do check it out. And do stay in touch with us, you know, drop us a line, and we're always ready for your prayers and donations. That brings us to the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us. It was sort of a review and then not a review because I wanted to show that, you know, things are evolving even within the grander, on the grander scale within the Armenian Church. And we need to pray for Holy Etchmiadzin. We need to pray for Bishop Bakrad and in his new ministry, in his new position, directing this department of social doctrine. And he certainly will be in our prayers, and I ask for you to pray as well. Last week, I ended the podcast with a prayer request for Archbishop Mesrop Mutafi, and I got a couple people asking me, well, how come we don't hear from him? Bishop Mesrop was elected as the Patriarch of Istanbul, but shortly after his election, he fell ill with a disease, and he's basically incapacitated. And so the Patriarchate of Istanbul is run by locum tenens, people who are in that position while the Patriarch is incapacitated. So please remember in your prayers, remember all the priests, remember me, remember all the servants of God, remember your bishop, your priest, whoever they may be. Go up to them and tell them that you're praying for them. Yes, I know, Janine was talking about Hug a Priest Day or Hug a Priest Week. We're open to that. Hint, hint. Got to get together next year. We're going to be putting together something. Hopefully we'll get the whole Apostle family together, and we'll have information about that hopefully soon, okay? June in mind, next June 2014. We are just talking now, right now, about doing a pilgrimage in Armenia. And this would not be a touristy kind of thing. This would be something that you would go and actually go to some of the holier shrines. And I'm planning on leading that, God willing, and take a spiritual look at some of those shrines. And I made a promise that if we don't do Armenia, we're going to do the Southwest. There's a lot of neat places in the Southwest. You know that. You all know that. Hey, listen, for the wonderful team who put today's show together, I want to thank you for joining us. Do check us out on Facebook. We are at Facebook/Apostle, as well as St. Peter Armenian Church in Glendale, and us personally, myself and Susie, Anush, Linda, we're all on Facebook, so you can just check us out, and the Apostle team, so to speak. And, of course, check us out at the main websites, epostle.net, where you'll find all of our information, all of our programming. And, by the way, listen, download that app. I just got a new Android device, and I hadn't used the app in a long time. I downloaded it. That app is fantastic. Epostle.net. Just point your camera right to that little QR code, and it'll come down. It is a fantastic, fantastic app done by one of our men, Shantzadoyan. Want to do a shout-out to him and thank him for doing that. Hey, for the wonderful team who brought today's show here and into your lives, for Susie, our producer, Vahe, our webman, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your broadcast out.